And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this most joyous of breakdown editions as we get to dive into an Axe Week victory. It's been far too long. We've heard the stats for far too long. The first win in Madison since 1994, the first win for Minnesota over Wisconsin since 2003. And this was a laugher, an absolute laugher. Minnesota's up at 1.30 points on the Wisconsin Badgers in Madison in the fourth quarter before a garbage time score. It is going to be a very fun edition here tonight, as there's a lot to get into and a lot to break down. And before I bring in our special guest, Luke, do you want to give the folks a word from our sponsor?
Yeah, as always, this 2018 season is sponsored by the Goal Line Club. They've been a great partner of ours this season. If you're interested in supporting Gopher football in any way, monetarily, or just being a part of a group of great folks that love Gopher football, consider joining the Goal Line Club at goalineclub.org.
There's so many reasons for our special guest here tonight to be excited about his Axe Week victory. He's a former Golden Gopher, offensive lineman, and to watch Minnesota's offensive line absolutely decimate this Badger team all game long is, and joining us to break it down as my second cousin, Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, how excited were you Saturday evening?
Well, it was fun. I know for the Gopher fans out there, it was a long time coming, and it's one of those, you know, one of those games that I think you could look from the outside and say it's one game, it's a rivalry, but there's a buildup. I mean, those years that you work for that and hope for that as a fan, the players, you know, coaches build towards this. That builds the excitement, that builds for the, you know, the celebration afterwards, and just as a former player and, you know, now a fan, it doesn't get much better for a regular season game.
All right. So obviously most people are aware now that the Gophers did win this game 37-15, as Ryan alluded. It really wasn't even close. The Gophers, well, I shouldn't say that it wasn't close. It definitely wasn't very close in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter. You know, the Gophers really salted it away. But in this game, I think, as Ryan already alluded, this offensive line probably, both offensive and defensive lines, but maybe more so the offensive line, really set the tone. So, Derek, as a former offensive lineman, what was working well for that offensive line in this game?
Well, I think that Wisconsin, their defense coming into the game, I think made a, you know, had a plan to try and stop the Gophers play action passing, the RPO slant. And part of that involved the defensive ends trying to knock down passes. If you were to see at the beginning of the game, they were able to get tip passes on at least three, if not four passes. But what happens is if you scheme towards that, you're not playing as aggressive with your defensive ends in both run and pass. And so the Gophers countered by running inside zone and just, you know, running off of that weak side on zone and zone read and just attacking the defensive ends over and over again. And so put them in a position of having to defend that. And as the Gophers were able to get a lead in the second half, you know, that lended itself to, you know, just controlling the ball and trying to limit possessions for Wisconsin. So I think that's where, you know, the offensive line, the blocking on the edge, and then the physical game from the running backs, you add those three things together and that leads to success in the running game. And I know as an offensive lineman, you know, I was watching the second half and just, you know, thinking that those are the drives that just kill you as an offensive lineman, just kill your body. You know, it's kind of akin to, you know, every one of those plays is like running a sprint. And so you put 15, 13, 14, 15 plays in a row. It's like, you know, running 15 sprints in a row and you're exhausted after those. So I felt for those guys physically, you know, I know they were happy and, you know, it was all for the good, but tremendous job by those guys being physical up front.
I think for as aggressive as Minnesota's offensive line was, you have to give a lot of credit to PJ Fleck and Kirk Shiraka, specifically when you look at that mid-second quarter drive where Minnesota decides to go for it twice on fourth and short. I couldn't have been in more favor of that decision for a multitude of different reasons. You're up 3-0 in Madison. It's midway through the second quarter. You're a double-digit point dog. You're on the road. You haven't won in Madison in 24 years. You haven't beaten Madison in 15 years almost. You have to be aggressive. And the way Minnesota's offensive line and tight end group have been playing, we talked about this, these two groups, Brian Callahan's offensive line, Clay Patterson's tight ends. They're seemingly every breakdown addition here in the last 2 months. And now here we are talking about them again, where Colton Beebe, what a way to go out for him. I know he's got a bowl game coming out ahead of him, but he was absolutely devastating. Him and Sam Schluter, and they were lined up, whether it was the Wildcat. And then Jake Paulson was very, very good coming across the formation there to kick off, to kick out the edge defender for Madison. And just the way that P.J. Fleck wasn't afraid to go for it. Now, it would have been so easy to have taken points there and just gone up 6-0, but field goals aren't going to win you games when you have a streak that Minnesota had and you're a road dog, a double-digit road dog against a Wisconsin team that had been pretty good. And I just love the decision from Kirk Ciarrocca and P.J. Fleck to go for it. And now you saw Minnesota set it up. You saw Seth Green being able to get it on the first fourth down and short. Minnesota decides to go for it again, runs the exact same play, and the only difference is that, Seth Green is able to give it to Mo Ibrahim. Danielle Green is able to make sure he holds the edge there. The rest of the Wisconsin guys go towards the middle. And when Paulson came across the formation there, because Minnesota ran back to where Paulson was, he dragged the corner from that side all the way across the formation. So all they had to do, Mo just turns the corner, and he notices no one's there and to sprint to the pylon. I just love the way that Fleck and Ciarrocca were aggressive there, and I thought that that drive specifically set the tone for the rest of the game.
All right, so you look at this, you know, from some of the obvious statistics that we look at where Wisconsin traditionally succeeds, you know, time of possession. In this game, you know, the script really flipped. The Gophers possessed the ball for 35 minutes while Wisconsin possessed it for just under 25. You look at total rushing yards. The Gophers had 201 rushing yards to Wisconsin's 170. That 170 is basically what Taylor had averaged in Big Ten play, if I'm not mistaken. Conversely, you know, this is just a game that the Gophers traditionally have really struggled with turnovers. And quite frankly, offensively, they had no turnovers. That was probably the biggest difference for them offensively in this game. But Derek, I just wanted to get your thoughts. You know, as we kind of wrap up this season, you know, the microcosm of what this offense maybe could be or what they want it to be, is this game kind of, does that epitomize that, where they want to be physical, meaning Minnesota, be physical, and, you know, it's not necessarily an all aerial attack at all times?
Yeah, I think that was maybe a little bit of a surprise for people, you know, that there's been a light shined on the Minnesota offensive wide receivers for the amount of talent they have and how well they've been playing, you know, given their, you know, they're young and inexperienced, but they're not playing that way. They've played very well and had a lot of success on offense throwing the ball. But I think you're right, Luke, that it's good to see balance, and I think the offensive line has been, in my opinion, has been the most improved unit on the Gophers team from the first game to the last game. It continued to get better. And I think you're seeing, I can't remember if it was, I believe it was the Purdue game when I saw them start to have success running into plus one boxes on defense. That to me is a sign of the next level of being successful running the ball. And so when you're able to do that, as we touched on a couple of weeks ago, that, you know, presents a very different problem, a very difficult problem for defenses. If you put an extra guy in the box and they still can get 4 or 5 yards running the ball, that's really difficult to stop that. And so against Wisconsin on Saturday, you know, for most of the second half, they were running in the plus one boxes, but the repetitions they've got, the amount they've grown on the offensive line. And then, you know, from the running back position, I think there's a comfort level and a vision, you know, that those guys have created to be able to read those blocks on zone read and inside zone and just get, you know, 4 or 5 yards with, even with an unblocked man on the backside. And, that's going to be good to build on going forward, a very tough for other teams to defend.
I fully agree with that. And, you know, I also want to touch on Tanner Morgan and Mo Ibrahim. I mean, with Tanner Morgan, the stat line on the day doesn't look spectacular. He was only had to throw the ball 16 times. He had a couple of deflected passes there early on that made me a little bit worried, as Derek has mentioned. What Wisconsin was doing with their edge defenders was not exactly rushing up the field. They were trying to play for that tip pass. And I'm sure many of the folks listening are Viking fans as well, and you've seen Kirk Cousins run into that issue to where teams aren't really necessarily rushing the Viking offensive line off the edges. They're just trying to get their hands up, and that's what Wisconsin was able to do. But for Tanner Morgan, I think this game for him came down to three things. Two of them were two huge throws on Minnesota's gargantuan 15-play drive that went over 9 minutes. Unfortunately, Emmett Carpenter isn't able to make it a three-score game, but he makes two huge third-down throws under Rashad Bateman, extends the play, extends the drive, gets Minnesota a fresh set of downs. And then that third and six play where Tyler Johnson comes out of the slot, runs a skinny post, he's able to fit it right behind the linebacker for Wisconsin, Van Ginkle, and Minnesota on third and six is able to continue a very, very time-crunching drive. Just two big-time throws for him. And then maybe the most important thing was, you look at this Gopher offense on the day, folks, zero turnovers. The most turnover-prone offense in Big Ten play coming into this game exits Wisconsin without a single turnover. Tanner Morgan, as I mentioned, only threw the ball 16 times, but he made good decisions when he had the ball in his hands. Now, do I still want to see the quarterback take the damn ball more than one time? Absolutely. And from talking with someone who is very knowledgeable of the situation after the game, I can assure you that Kirk Ciarrocca is well aware of the tendencies that Minnesota has in the read option, and the quarterbacks have the green light at any point to take it and run. And Minnesota, I can assure you, will be trying to work on that in the bowl game and heading into the 2019 season. And then with Mo Ibrahim, I don't know that there's a more improved player on this Gopher team on the offense. Just the way that this mighty mouse can continue to grind his legs, continue to fall forward, can continue to run through arm tackles. I mean, he's the guy, along with this offensive line, that kept the chains moving. 26 carries for 121 yards and a score. He's able to just continue to move piles and fall forward and just be a thorn in the side of whoever he's going against, especially in a game like what you saw on Saturday. It was going to be a slugfest with between the hashes. It wasn't going to be necessarily one on the outside, especially as you saw Alex Hornibrook is just he's a terrible quarterback trying to pass the ball. So Minnesota is able to lean on Mo Ibrahim in this running offense, and they're able to get things moving forward. And I think Mo Ibrahim's running style set things up for Bryce Williams in those two fourth quarter scores, where Bryce is able to run through a couple of tackles, yes, but then he turns the corner, and these Wisconsin back seven players are tired from having to go into the box and try to tackle Mo Ibrahim because they're getting hit from Jake Paulson, Cole Keith, Colton Beebe in this offensive line. And so if they're a step slow, Bryce Williams comes in the game, only has eight carries, but he goes for 50 yards and two scores, and on his two scores, they're both 15-plus yard touchdown runs. So I'll continue to harp on this. I don't know how you cannot be excited about the direction that this offense is heading in. The final eight Big Ten games of the year, they score 28-plus points in six of them. They just put up 37 points in Wisconsin. They were able to dominate Wisconsin's front seven. And this is essentially, we were talking about this in the pre-production meeting, this is a flipped script from what we've seen for about a decade, where the Wisconsin offense had just been able to grind down the Gopher defense, and eventually it's too much, and then you get the opposing offense into a negative game script type of situation, and then that quarterback's not capable of leading a comeback. Well, that's exactly what Minnesota did against Wisconsin was it grinded them down. It had some aggressive play calls to have them go up two scores there on that drive that I've already mentioned. Demetrius Douglas has a big play. You're up 17. And this Wisconsin offense isn't built to come from 17 points behind. Because Luke mentioned it, Jonathan Taylor, 120 yards rushing, but they were an empty 120 yards. In Wisconsin's five losses this year now, Jonathan Taylor has combined for one rushing touchdown. That's how you know this Wisconsin passing offense isn't doing anything, is Jonathan Taylor can't get going, and Minnesota, we'll get to it, had one of their best days tackling all around, even without Blake Cashman. But offensively, you have nine starters returning for 2019. You're going to be replacing Jared Weiler and Donnell Green. You'll slide in Curtis Dunlap. And I think this 2019 offensive line has a chance to be the most powerful run-grading offensive line we've seen in quite some time. And if you haven't seen it or heard it, Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks are going to be back next year. They're going to be running into the least loaded boxes they've ever seen in their career. And, oh, by the way, they're also got their best run-blocking offensive line they're ever going to have in a Gopher uniform. So if you are going to buy stock into anything, as long as Kirk Ciarrocca is here and these pass catchers are here, we didn't even talk about Tyler Johnson or Rashad Bateman, Chris Hoffman-Bell. I mean, Tyler is 17 yards short now of the single-season receiving record. I'll imagine he's going to get that on his first catch in the bowl game. But the way that this pass-catching core is developing, you get Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks next year to pair with Mo Ibrahim, being a pair and a spare, you can't help but be excited about where this Gopher offense is trending heading into 2019 and 2020.
All right, Derek, I'm going to give you an opportunity if there's anything else you want to touch on, because I want to talk a little bit of special teams because they played a huge factor in this game.
No, I just echo a couple things Ryan said, just to call out some guys. Colton Beebe, I thought, incredible game for him blocking on the edge. Again, with the inside zone they were running on the backside and the weak side, he had an incredible game. Might have been his best game of his career. And then, you know, might not seem like it, but some of the third and fourth and short play calling, very similar plays as Ryan alluded to, but just throwing in some very small wrinkles, I think, made a difference. Running the same play out of a different formation, for example, or running the same play, handing it to the running back as opposed to keeping it, just kept them off balance enough. You know, good push from the front five, but kept them just off balance enough to convert those. And I think offensively, I think the difference in the game was being able to convert on third and fourth and short. I think that was the key for the offense to succeed.
Before we kick into defense, I do want to ask Derek one thing.
Sure.
And you look at the success that Minnesota had offensively, especially in the second half, they weren't doing anything incredibly tricky. Essentially, they were running the same three plays, and Wisconsin just couldn't stop it. What did you think about Kirk Ciarrocca just going back to the same thing over and over again? Because in my opinion, and the opinion of some on the Gopher staff, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And literally, Wisconsin couldn't do anything to get out of their way as Minnesota kept converting on these third downs. But just the demoralizing mentality that was some of these drives for Minnesota, that 15-play drive in the second half, you also had scoring drives of 8 and 9 plays. How demoralizing is that, knowing that Minnesota is only running about 3 or 4 different plays, yet as a defense, you can't stop us?
Yeah, it's It wears on you mentally as well as physically. But you think about it, you know, the next thing that comes to mind is, well, what changes would you have to make in order to stop that? And whatever you do, it's going to mean more risk for your defense. And I think that's, you know, Wisconsin stayed. I believe they tried to stay a little bit vanilla and try to slow things down and let their offense try and come back. If you've seen your point, Ryan, that the games that Wisconsin's won, it's because they've been able to manufacture some explosive gains on offense, you know, give Taylor enough carries to where he finally, you know, busts one for a touchdown. And it never happened. On defense, again, if you're going to try and stop that, you either have to get more risky with your secondary by putting another, bringing up a safety, bringing up both safeties, blitzing a corner, blitzing a safety, which puts you on island coverage, which I don't think they wanted to do. Or you have to start stunting and blitzing and moving your defensive front more, which now, instead of taking the 4 and 5 yard gains, you're risking a guy getting out of his gap and then busting one of the 4 and 5 yard gains for a, you know, a 30, 40, 50, 60 yard touchdown. So, yeah, I think they took the lesser of two evils, if you will, and tried to play it head up, tried to, you know, force Minnesota to grind it out. But unfortunately for them, Minnesota did grind it out and were able to keep things short up on defense.
All right, so I wanted to talk a little bit of special teams because I thought that this really, you know, Emmett Carpenter may have missed one kick, but This might have been their most complete complete day. Everybody's going to see the Demetrius Douglas punt return, which obviously was the big momentum gainer, and that was great. But, you know, 13 points out of Emmett Carpenter in a game is phenomenal considering it's late November. Jacob Herber's kind of had two punts that epitomized his season. He had a booming 49-yarder and then a terrible 26-yarder. But for me, I think the thing that stood out was they were able to stop Wisconsin. Not that Wisconsin is so dynamic in the kicking game, but, you know, there was, you know, only one punt return that ended up getting Blake Cashman ejected for targeting, which I do believe was the right call. I grossly disagree with the kick catch interference. I think that was a terrible call. But Ryan, I'd like your opinion on that. I thought that was a terrible call, the kick catch interference. He definitely gave him plenty of time to catch the, or he gave him plenty of space by definition of the letter of the law. But he definitely targeted him.
It's, you know, from watching that back, by the way, if you want to rewatch that game via GIFs, it takes a lot quicker. If you just had to go for Illustrated, check out the GIF rewind. It's free. 20 key plays from that Wisconsin game that I thought summed it up very well. And that targeting call was one of them where I don't know what you want to have Blake Cashman do there, because the vertically challenged punt returner for Wisconsin, number one, catches the ball. And then as he's catching it, he's bending down. So he's going from 5'8 to 5'2. Yet I have zero idea what he was thinking and not fair catching that. I don't know how that's kick catch interference when Blake doesn't hit him immediately. I mean, he hit him very close to being immediately, but Cashman led with his shoulder. It just happened to be he's aiming for a guy who's 5'8", and the guy ends up being 5'2", and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. It's helmet to helmet, and he's ejected. It's just too bad that, you know, it was almost a season ender for Blake on a play where, you know, maybe it is justfully so that Blake Cashman, who starts his career and earns reps on defense on special teams, ends up going out on special teams, but he's able to come back for the bowl game now. But, and then with Emmett Carpenter and Demetrius Douglas, special teams for Minnesota accounted for 19 of the 37 points on the day.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
You know, Emmett Carpenter returning to Wisconsin for a quote unquote revenge game. Wisconsin doesn't recruit him. He's a Green Bay native. He's able to go into Madison. He's able to go 3 of 4 from a field goal perspective, convert all of his PATs. And then maybe the most momentum playing change of the game with Demetrius Douglas, he's able to elude two guys for Wisconsin immediately. Then he gets great blocks from Justice Harris, Jacob Huff, Matt Morris, Chris Williamson, and is able to turn on the Jets. And you're looking at a 10-point lead versus a 3-score lead. That's a huge, huge play. So Rob Wenger's special teams unit having, I believe, 19 points being accounted for, that's how you win in a convincing fashion, being up by 30 points against Wisconsin, is you have a complete team effort on offense, defense, and special teams, and all three units were performing at a high level on Saturday.
All right, so maybe just to close out the special teams discussion, I kind of want to focus on that targeting and get Derek's thoughts primarily on the intent of the rule. So I'm all for keeping the game of football more safe, right? And I think that, you know, this situation with Cashman was called correctly as you read the letter of the law. Unfortunately, I believe this is an unintended consequence of the rule, because there isn't much that Cashman can really do in that kind of situation. You know, as defenseless as the kick returner is, which I do believe he is, Cashman in a way is defenseless in the sense that he has no ability to really control where that player is going to drop his head to. So curious now, I think targeting has been, what, 3 or 4 years in the making. Derek, what are your thoughts on targeting as a whole and how it's been implemented and how it kind of stands in the state of college football?
Yeah, it's a boy. That's a difficult question to answer. In my opinion, I'm like you. I'm all for making the game safer, and I think that's the spirit of some of these rule changes: is try and make the game safer and take some of these upper body hits away, hits to the head. But something I would like to see, and the officials don't like to implement things like this because they don't like to get to, they try and take intent out of it. They try and make it as objective as possible. But one thing I look at, whether it's a play like, you know, the punt that was fielded on Saturday or a receiver catching a pass across the middle. When you're dealing with a hit like that, is I like to think about, is the player trying to make a tackle or is the player trying to make a hit? And I think what you want to take out of the game is these devastating hits where the player is not trying to make a football tackle. Now, you'd have to somehow objectify that and, you know, write the wording such that you can take the gray area out of it. But, on Saturday, for example, I think he's trying to make a football tackle. Yes, according to the letter of the law, the way it's written now, I guess technically it's a penalty, but I didn't agree with the call. I think he's trying to make a tackle. I think you're trying to be aggressive to go down and cover the kick. I don't think there was intent there. He hits him with the shoulder. Yes, it was the upper, neck area, but I'd like to see something implemented, such that you're not trying to hit a player in the head. Now, if you go to make a tackle and part of your body in making the tackle happens to contact the upper body, and it's not intentional, then something's got to be written in there, because it has to be, as has been stated by several of the players in the NFL and college, these rules have to be physically possible to follow. And I think some of these hits on defense, when you're trying to make an honest tackle and it just so happens that you cross the line, that's a tough world to live in. It has to be cut and dry. And I think they need a little work on it still.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. I think at this point we should give a word to our sponsor. Again, the Goal Line Club is sponsoring this 2018 season. We've appreciated their sponsorship all year. They have a couple of events coming up that we do want to note. If you're interested in joining the signing day report with PJ Fleck, it's $30 for member, $40 for non-members of the Goal Line Club. The event will be Wednesday, December 19th. We'll be in the DQ Club Room at TCF Bank Stadium. The doors open at 5 p.m. The program will start about 6. There'll be a light dinner buffet available for those interested. Registration for that event closes 1 p.m. on Friday, December 14th. You have plenty of time to sign up. So make sure you get some friends together. There will be parking available in the Gopher lot for $5. No, sorry, in the Maroon and Victory lots for $5. Additionally, if you want to participate in the 2018 Gopher Football Banquet, that event will be Sunday, December 16th. That will be in the DQ Club Room. You have until Tuesday, December 11th to sign up. That's $50. If you want to get a full table, it's $500. You can also sign up for that on goallineclub.org. All right, let's talk a little bit of defense here, guys. It's really weird to say, but this Gopher defense has made a stark improvement after being arguably one of the worst defenses in all of the Big Ten. They follow up a great performance against Purdue with a somewhat decent performance against Northwestern, and then hold the Wisconsin team where they have really, really struggled against, especially in Madison, to only 15 points on the day. Again, we noted that Jonathan Taylor only had 120 yards. For the most part, that seems like a pretty good game. But as Ryan mentioned, it was a fairly empty 120 yards. So, Derek, curious to hear your thoughts. I know we'll talk more about Joe Rossi and the changes he's made. But schematically, what did you see that the Gophers did well against Wisconsin this week?
Well, I thought going into the game that Minnesota's defense matched up well with Wisconsin's offensive scheme. This is the challenge of playing in the Big Ten, but it's also, one of the reasons I love college football is, as a fan, is you get to see all these different type of strategies and schemes. And one week you have to try and defend a wide open spread offense, throwing the ball sideline to sideline, jet sweeps, things like that. And then the next week you have to come back and try and defend a downhill power running team like Wisconsin that runs predominantly between the tackles. So I think, Wisconsin, they didn't deviate from their game plan, and they haven't in years. They ran a lot of power running between the tackles. They did throw in a jet sweep and some draws. They had a little bit of success with the draw, but I thought the Minnesota defensive line played their best game of the year. Just an outstanding job. Usually in a game where the defense is holding the offense in check, running the ball. More often than not, it's because of the running backs. Usually the defensive line sets things up. Linebackers. The linebackers are the ones that are coming up, making tackles in the backfield. And I thought the linebackers played well for Minnesota, but I really thought the defensive line was the story on Saturday. Getting penetration in the backfield, taking on double teams, not getting pushed out of their gaps, of being able to sit down on the double teams. I thought that, you know, it was as good as I've seen, you know, Minnesota team play against that Wisconsin power running and in a long time. You know, particularly Royal Silver, OJ Smith, fantastic job from those guys. And then lastly, I thought it was a really good game from Jacob Huff. Some of those, you know, Wisconsin was able to have a little bit of success, some mid-yardage success, 5, 6, 8 yard gains when they were able to see a crease. But I thought he was able to come up and against the run and make a stop on a lot of those plays to keep them from being explosive runs. If you've seen Wisconsin succeed in other games, they'll hit you for 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, and then they'll bust one from a touchdown. Never saw that on Saturday, and that was, I think, attributable to, you know, the safeties, particularly Huff coming up and making some of those tackles.
I think you got to look at all three levels of the defense, starting with your defensive line, as Derek mentioned, but all three levels to me stood out, and that's how you know that this defense is playing well and playing fast. You get 4 turnovers in the day, and it's because of all three levels, starting with that defensive line, like Derek said. I also want to give a shout-out to Gary Moore. I mean, Gary Moore was one of the players I was the most nervous about coming into this game. And I think rightfully so. He'd had significant issues staying in his gap in run support, yet he was one of the guys being as disruptive as Royal Silver and O.J. Smith were. Now, is it a huge coup that Minnesota was able to get O.J. Smith back for the first time in 6-7 games? Royal Smith hadn't played in a few games as well, and their bodies were fresh compared to what Wisconsin's offensive line was. Yes, but I also need to put into perspective here, folks, if you didn't listen to the preview edition of this Wisconsin-Minnesota game, this Wisconsin offensive line rated out as the best run-blocking offensive line in college football per Football Study Hall, which all of you should know by now is one of my favorite websites to look at in terms of on the team side of things. This is an offensive line that had been run grading everyone. You look at last week, Jonathan Taylor had 330 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns. Now, that game did go into a couple of different overtimes, but Minnesota's defensive line didn't give them anything. You also can see some of the stunts that Joe Rossi was incorporating into trying to stop Jonathan Taylor. You saw a multitude of different times that Carter Coughlin was being used on stunts, whether it was going outside, looping around Gary Moore, coming in, getting a tackle for loss, him being showing double A-gap pressure there on different situations as well. Joe Rossi just switched it up. And then with the linebacking crew, how gutsy of a performance from Julian Huff. Blake Cashman goes out. Julian Huff hasn't likely played more than 20 meaningful snaps on defense the entire year. He's from the northern part of Illinois, Bolingbrook, Illinois. He's a senior. He comes in, has a huge interception there off a tip pass that I believe was on Keandre Thomas's guy, Chris Williamson. Is able to mash his guy in the back to make sure he doesn't get it. Julian Huff also comes up with a few different key tackles to make sure Jonathan Taylor, as Derek Burns has been mentioning, doesn't go 3-3-3-53. Minnesota was able to keep him in check all game because Jonathan Taylor coming into this game in Big Ten play was averaging 170 yards a game on the ground and multiple rushing touchdowns. Minnesota holds him to an empty 120 yards and 0 touchdowns. I was just thoroughly impressed by the way that all three levels of the defense did this. Jacob Huff had one of his best tackling games of the year. Minnesota needed it. And then you saw Coney Durr and Chris Williamson. We're going to continue to talk about Chris Williamson, Derek, until this dude is getting the recognition he deserves. I don't know that any defensive back has improved as much as he has throughout the season here. And I don't know that a defensive back has had a better November and what Chris Williamson had. But, Derek, I want to ask you about that first interception of the game. I know that's something that you were highlighting on your Twitter there. If you want to follow Derek on Twitter, it's Derek_S_Burns. One of the most elite X's and O's, Gopher Football Mind, you will find on the interwebs. You know, I would try to describe it, but I know I cannot do it as eloquently as you. But the way Joe Rossi schemed that, Alex Hornibrook should have seen Coney Durr there, but the way Minnesota schemed that coverage-wise, that was a very good play by Joe Rossi.
That was, I think, the best defensive call of the game, in my opinion. What Minnesota has shown, we talk about tendencies, what Minnesota has shown previously is they like to play zone with their linebackers in the middle of the field. They zone things off. That helps them in the run, and it also takes away the crossing routes from the wide receivers. And they like to play man coverage on the outside with their secondary, with their back four, essentially, in the secondary. So what Minnesota did on that play, they had a play call where pre-snap, they lined up and gave a look where Coney Durr looked like he was in man coverage on the wide receiver, and it looked like the linebacker was going to drop into zone coverage. I believe it was Julian Hoff. And post-snap, what happened is Wisconsin ran crossing routes. And what you do is you run a crossing route, and if it's man coverage, you follow, you extend the play and hit a guy with in tight coverage. If it's zone, they'll settle down in the zone. What Minnesota did is post-snap, they flip-flop. So the Wisconsin wide receivers run crossing routes, and Coney Durr on his first few steps makes it look like it's man coverage and then breaks it off and drops into his zone. And the inside linebacker, who looked like he was in zone coverage, comes up and plays man coverage on the running back coming out of the backfield. So what it did is it gave the quarterback his first read was, okay, they're playing zone over the middle, man on the outside. He looks for the crossing route. Doesn't see Coney Durr break off into his zone, fools the QB, and ends up making an interception. So really nice play call in the secondary by the Gophers defense.
All right, so let's look a little bit at this Gopher defense. We did highlight the one turnover. They actually had four on the day. One, I guess, did come on special teams, but the defense forced three. This is something that the defense hasn't done particularly well. But also on the day, they forced Wisconsin into 4 of 11 on third down and 0-1 on fourth down. Derek, I did want to get your thoughts in particular on this Gopher defense in the fourth quarter, or in the second half, I should say, and mostly that fourth quarter as well. They really made Alex Hornibrook look like he was not comfortable. You know, Hornibrook ended up 22 of 33 for 189 yards and 3 interceptions on the day. You know, what was that? Was that more coverage? I mean, they were getting some pressure, not a ton, but what was it? Was it just him not being comfortable, you know, playing from behind? What was that?
Well, I think that early on in the game, the Gophers ran a lot of just traditional zone in Wisconsin. And the reason for that, in my opinion, is so that they could dedicate as many assets as they could to stopping the run. They could read and react to the Wisconsin running game and not put themselves in a position, you know, where they're running with their back to the football, leaves the scramble open, makes it tougher sometimes for the running backs trying to cover things like bubble screen and cover running backs out of the backfield. So they started with a lot of traditional zone coverage, and I think Wisconsin saw that right away, was able to capitalize. Actually, in the first half, I thought the Wisconsin quarterback was pretty on. You know, some of the zone passing, those guys were sitting down, they converted some third downs early in the game. And I thought as the game went on, they started switching up and, like the Durr interception we talked about, throwing in some wrinkles in pass coverage. So they started to get a little bit more pressure by running some stunts and some blitzes, not heavy jailbreak blitzes, nothing cover zero or anything like that, but bringing just an extra pass rusher, lining up Carter Coughlin in some different points on the defensive line to try to get pressure with him, but then just mixing up the coverages a little bit. I think that got the quarterback rattled, actually. I think particularly that interception we talked about, you know, something that he didn't see post-snap, you know, he made the wrong read. And I think for the remainder of the game, they kind of had them on their heels. And I think that, you know, it did sink into the quarterback, you know, having a bad second half and just not being able to execute. So I think once Minnesota determined that they were able to keep things in check a little bit in the running game, it gave them a little bit more confidence to switch up the coverages in the second half a little bit. Just, you know, like we talked about all year, you know, run the same coverage for three plays and then switch it up on the next play just to keep them honest. And I think that worked well.
Isn't it refreshing to see a defensive coordinator switch up coverages from man coverage to zone coverage to off coverage to stunting their linebackers with their defensive line to try and generate pressure? The hell of a theory that we've seen from Joe Rossi, and that's why you saw Minnesota generate 4 second half turnovers. You look at some of the reasons why Alex Hornibrook struggled the way he did. Number one, I don't think he's tremendously talented. Number two, look at some of these key plays. You look at Wisconsin going for it on their first drive of the second half, fourth and four. Carter Coughlin is lined up as a defensive tackle alongside Jerry Gibson in the A-gap. Carter Coughlin's just too quick for the opposing guard that he's going against. Slips past him. Hornibrook throws it a little bit quicker than he has to. And that ball just floats harmlessly incomplete about 7 yards away from the nearest player. Turnover on downs. You see Minnesota being able to generate pressure around Alex Hornibrook. Of course, is a poor throw. Carter Coughlin in the first half there on that first interception. Carter Coughlin's the one driving back the right tackle into Hornibrook's lap. Can we talk about that for a second? Carter Coughlin, 235 pounds, is bull rushing a Wisconsin right tackle into Hornibrook, forces Hornibrook probably to throw it a little bit closer or a little bit earlier than he wanted to. Interception. Chris Williamson makes a great diving read on his interception. His eyes are in the backfield. He knows where the receiver is, makes a great diving catch. Interception. You see that Minnesota forces a third and long. Alex Hornibrook rolls out to his left. Kamal Martin plays it perfectly where you don't want to allow him, you don't want to rush him too early, where if you miss, he's going to use his legs to get the first down. He just slowly plays it, gets his arms up in his face, deflected ball, Julian Huff is able to get in front of it. And then finally, Carter Coughlin puts the game away with a strip sack that Thomas Barber is able to jump on. Just all three levels of the Gopher defense were playing at a high level. How many different guys that I just mentioned right here in this take-give part on the defensive line, linebacking core, and in the secondary that were making plays? If you are plus four in the take-give, you're going to win a lot of football games, and Minnesota was able to do that thanks to a very opportunistic defense on Saturday.
All right, before we get into talking about Joe Rossi and the news of him being becoming the new defensive coordinator, the interim tag being removed, I imagine this is something you may have hinted at, Ryan, on your Gopher Illustrated in the message board community there. If people are interested in becoming a part of this this community, how can they get involved? Might you have a Cyber Monday deal for them?
Yeah, by the time you listen to this, you're probably on your way to work on Monday or on your way home. I would thoroughly encourage you to head on over to Gopher Illustrated and give us a shot. Our Cyber Monday deal, it is 50% off for a membership. You are not going to find a better deal all year. This is the best deal we're going to be offering. And as you look at where we're at in relationship to National Signing Day, I mean, folks, we're about 3.5 weeks away. Minnesota's got a top 35 class right now. And P.J. Fleck is already at his destination. He's going to be on the road for the next, I believe, 21 days or whatever it is, 24 days until National Signing Day. It's going to be a very interesting race to the finish. Minnesota's already got multiple four-stars that they're going to be going to see. They have a four-star coming in this weekend. If you are at all interested at learning about, you know, Gopher football from the various gift rewinds that we offer, the different previews that we've run throughout the entire season, or from just listening to me here on Gopher Gridiron Radio for years, it is 50% off membership Cyber Monday only. So Monday morning, this thing's going to go live, and it's going to expire at 11 p.m. on Monday evening. Best opportunity all year to join what I believe is the best Gopher message board community. So if Gopher football is your thing, we also have the best basketball writer around in Ryan James. Luke will attest to that considering they have a podcast together as well. So 50% off memberships on Gopher Illustrated come Cyber Monday here. And with the sprint to the finish, and folks, we weren't even talking about Daniel Faalele and Curtis Dunlap Jr., who you guys are going to get to see next year, who is going to be a fantastic run grading interior offensive lineman. But you've seen the impact that Daniel Faalele has been providing for this Gopher offensive line, essentially changing everything around, making this one of the best run-blocking units we've seen in quite some time. Well, who's going to be the next guy? Who's going to be the next Tyler Johnson? Who's going to be the next Blake Cashman? All the answers that we've been talking about on Gopher Illustrated. So once again, check out GI, Cyber Monday deals, 50% off.
All right, so I want to get you guys, just give me your gut reaction to the news that Joe Rossi is the new defensive coordinator, having that interim tag removed. Derek?
At this stage in the game, being the end of PJ Fleck's second year, if I'm trying to put myself in his position, I think that, you know, he does a very good job on a few games that he auditions, if you can call it that. Hard to do better, actually, from a results perspective. But I think perhaps more importantly, I think the head coach is wondering about having to change a scheme, change the play calling, change the naming conventions, things like that. In the middle, you know, after year two, going into year three and four, when you're trying to, let's be honest, expectations are going to go up. You know, the pressure is going to go up a little bit, you know, coming in the next 2 years. And I think the risk of bringing in a new hire and you know, possibly having to overhaul things, you know, maybe is a bit daunting. And so going with a coach that had a very good audition, with the same calls, the same what the kids already know. They put 2 years in. They've recruited the assistant for 2 years. I think is probably all contributed to that decision. That's what went through my mind when I heard it.
My biggest thing before I kind of give my initial thoughts on this is, Derek, schematically, I think you've already touched on this early in the podcast, but for folks who are wondering, what have we seen in changes on this defense in the three games from Rob Smith to Joe Rossi that you think, anyway, has made all the world of difference here? Because we're talking about a Gopher defense that held Purdue to just 10 points, one of the hottest teams in the Big Ten, especially offensively. Coming into that game, Joe Rossi makes some simple changes and is able to turn around that Gopher defense. And that's one big thing PJ Fleck talked about in his press conference afterwards, was he was so impressed by the way that Joe Rossi was able to self-scout his own defense, know what the issue was. I mean, we're talking about a Gopher defense that the previous week before Purdue gave up 55 points and 430 rushing yards to an Illinois team that's still not particularly good. They come back the next week, and in five days, Joe Rossi is able to hold Purdue to -2 rushing yards through three quarters, 3 points through three quarters, and you've seen this Gopher defense play loads better than what we've seen the entire season. So what have you seen in terms of schematic changes or different thought processes, in your opinion, that have made Joe Rossi so much more successful with the same personnel that Rob Smith couldn't seem to figure out?
Well, I think I can give you three things that I've seen change on defense. I think the first is they took the linebackers, and particularly the inside linebackers, and ran more zone coverage in the middle of the field. And I think that was more than anything to help the run defense than the pass defense, because what was happening against the spread teams is, in man coverage, those running back linebackers were getting run out of the box by things like jet motion, fake bubble screen, things like that. And their responsibility level was very high, having to cover too much, I guess, is maybe a way to put it. So I think the first thing is running more zone coverage in the middle of the field. The second thing I would say is not monumentally different pass rushing schemes, but little wrinkles that you touched on, Ryan, where they were lining up Carter Coughlin, little twists, bringing in, they didn't do much against Wisconsin, but mixing in a safety blitz, mixing in an outside linebacker exchange where you bring an outside linebacker in, you drop a defensive end into coverage. So mixing things up in the pass rush and in passing down situations, I think changed. Didn't see much of that before. You know, I think that was another wrinkle. And I think the biggest change was that we've already touched on a bit was in the coverages. I think a lot of off coverage prior to Rossi and not much change, really didn't mix it up. Didn't even run press coverage in situations, you know, where, you know, third and short, third and medium, where you almost, you know, the book just says you have to do it. Didn't even see that. So I think the biggest change has been mixing up those coverages, running a mixture of man and zone, press coverage, a little bit of off coverage. And then most impressive to me, again, is that disguising coverages. I don't think we ever saw that before. You know, with several times a game now with Rossi, we've seen, again, pre-snap, post-snap, disguising some of those coverages, double A-gap pressures, dropping guys into coverage post-snap. That's what I've been most impressed with, and I think that's been the biggest schematic change.
Without question, and something I'm going to write about tomorrow on Gopher Illustrated, is this is the single biggest coaching hire in PJ Fleck's career. He has to be 100% behind this, because it's likely going to dictate his job security and job future here at the University of Minnesota. we've harped for many weeks on this podcast how we believe that the offensive trajectory is on the upward. Now, the question is going to be, is this a trend or is this a mirage, what we've seen with Joe Rossi and the way he's got this defense to play here the final 3 weeks of the year? Because if Minnesota and PJ Flick get this defensive coordinator hire right, Minnesota's defense can even just be above average, which I think they've been right there, above average to good here the last 3 weeks when you look at all three performances combined. And you put that together with a good offense, and you're talking about 8 wins next year. And if this defense doesn't have the smooth sailing that we've seen the last 3 weeks, well, then it's going to be the same old story. What we saw in terms of Minnesota arguably being the most inconsistent team in the country in 2018, the month of November being a perfect example. You lose by 30 to Illinois to come back the next week and be up by 40, or at least 38, against Purdue 7 days later, to then have a middling performance against Northwestern where your offense can't get on track because they're shooting themselves in the foot. And then the final game of the year, in terms of the regular season, you're up by 30 points against Madison in Madison. I mean, talk about just inconsistency from being down 30 points to Illinois on the road, but 3 weeks later being up 30 points on Wisconsin on the road. You don't know what you're going to get. And that's what PJ Fleck wants, is consistency. I think he's getting that, and he saw that with this offense. He talked about the point totals here in the last 8 Big Ten games. Six of those games, Minnesota scores 28-plus points. But defensively, you didn't know what you were getting. And so I'm going to kind of deep dive into the stats tomorrow and pair that with Derek's analysis here. But this has to be the right hire for PJ Fleck, because if it is, I mean, we're talking about some high aspirations for this team, which I think should be 8 wins in 2019. Then we can go forward from there. But it's hard to argue with the results that we've seen from Joe Rossi. He has an amazing self-scout from Illinois to Purdue, has one of the best defensive performances we've seen on a short turnaround, essentially gets 5 days to put in a game plan before Purdue hits this defense to pull a 180, and you've seen them play much, much, much better here in the final 3 games of the regular season. And so it's hard to argue that PJ Fleck is making the wrong decision, but it has to be the right one for Minnesota here, both in the short term and in the long term, if this program is going to ascend to heights that Fleck wants to make sure it does too.
I agree with you on that take. I think my initial gut reaction was, it was probably more negative. I don't think I've hidden any fact that I was not a fan of the Rob Smith hire from basically the first day. I know that Ryan and I had a lengthy conversation about hiring him away from Arkansas, and I was not a fan. I think it's fairly public knowledge that I'm not a huge fan of the Greg Schiano defensive approach. I think it's somewhat outdated, and we've seen that kind of across the board in college football. You can just look at Ohio State, signs of the Michigan game, which that was more, in my opinion, offense and turnover laden than a great defensive performance. I have concerns. Now, that said, I think that Rossi had a great audition. He showed a willingness to, you know, to steal a line from PJ Fleck, to change his best, to mix things up. I think if anything, I want him to be more like a Jay Savelle, where he wants to be more innovative with the personnel that he has, willing to adjust and change on things there to put players in a position to be successful. That's what I ultimately want. That's what I loved about Jay Savelle. He was willing to go to, you know, what was it, a 3-4 and even a 2-5. Well, Ryan, was that a 2-5? Four. What did Savelle end up?
Whatever you want to call it, a 2-5, a 3-4. I mean, there are different variations.
Yeah,
we've seen 3-4 from Joe Rossi here this year.
Yeah,
based primarily in their final season with Jay Savelle, it was 3-4.
Yeah, but to me, I think the larger point is I want to see, you know, Rossi put guys in positions to succeed. I don't want the stubbornness of someone like Rob Smith again. And I think that Rossi has shown in a small sample size he can do that. The one thing that concerned me was when Justin Gard was interviewing PJ and he made the announcement that I caught on KFAN, he made some allusion to, or he alluded to the fact that you know, they've run a scheme that's been very successful over a number of years. I don't know exactly what that meant, but I read that to be the Greg Schiano thing. So maybe maybe I'm a little tainted on this. And maybe you guys can call me out and say I'm completely crazy. But I agree with you, Ryan. This is the most important hire of PJ Fleck's career here at the University of Minnesota. And he's got to get this right, or I don't know. I don't have a lot of I don't have the optimism that I'd like to have going forward.
I don't know. I have optimism that this is going to work. I've seen the results. Now I just need to see it here long term. I guess I guess Derek, how's this? Where are you on the spectrum in terms of 1 to 10 about how you feel about this Joe Rossi defensive coordinator hire?
Oh, boy. Probably a 7. Meaning 10 means it's an absolute block, and 1 meaning a total mistake. Probably a 7. It is a small sample size, but the one thing I like about it is we talk about, and Luke, I'll steal one of your lines is, we always talk about, I hear what you're saying, but I want to see what you're doing. And it's kind of been the opposite in this case. It's not been, you know, under Rossi, it's not been a defense that struggled, but him saying, hey, it's going to work, it's going to work, we're doing this to fix it, we're doing, you know, all this talk. It's really, here in comes a guy that, man, a few words, you know, kind of a guy behind the scenes, doesn't say a whole lot, makes what I thought in 1 week in the Purdue game, what I thought was, I know PJ Fleck is on record as saying we just simplified. I was blown away by the number of changes they made in the coverages against a really hot Purdue passing team. And so it's kind of been the opposite, where if I had to spin this positive, we haven't heard much talk. We've just seen the results, and it's small sample size. The defensive offensive coordinators, they're going to get more of a sample size. They're going to develop schemes. It's a long-term play for sure. But I'd put myself at a 7.
Yeah, I think that's about where I'm at. I'm not significantly high, but I'm much more than lukewarm on it than I think Luke is. By the way, nice play on words there.
So. Well, let me say this. I'm more concerned in the long term, right? What we saw with Rob Smith is, you know, non-conference, he can be great in a small sample size, but over the larger aggregate, it's not great. Now, I'm not saying that I don't think Joe Rossi can be successful. I'm just saying, given 3 games, I'm not sure what to see. Everything is trending positively for me, but I'd like to see more. I understand that, you know, Fleck has to make a decision, and I respect the decision wholeheartedly. I think that he has the data to justify making the hire. And maybe this is a complete cop out by me kind of backtracking a tiny bit, but I was hoping, you know, that he could maybe make a bigger splash. I don't know how realistic that is. Maybe they did some diligence and saw what their options were, and there weren't options. That could be just the fact of the matter, but I know how difficult it can be, and I think there is something to the continuity that he speaks to. I think that is important in a lot of ways. He's got one opportunity at this, right? Like, this is it. If he screws this up, this probably is the end.
I'm not saying that you're hating on it and you're saying what a terrible hire. I mean, you're providing skepticism in terms of, and realistic skepticism is always welcome. I just think that I'm a little bit, I'm not nearly as skeptical as Luke. I think I'm more on the same wavelength that Derek is, that it's about a 7. It's just, I need to see it long term. Now, this isn't sexy. It isn't splashy. Just promoting a guy from within, especially where you look at the track record for Joe Rossi, and it's lukewarm. You know, he's been at Rutgers. He's been at Maine. You know, is it the talent at those schools? It just, he didn't have what he needed. But it has to be the right hire. And I think that's the biggest thing that we can stress is Joe Rossi is going to be the guy going forward. Now, is it going to work? Well, PJ Fleck is surely banking on it. He's putting his entire Minnesota future on that Joe Rossi is going to be the guy. Now we're going to have to see if it plays out. Now, I also want to touch on, you know, I've had a lot of speculation on Gopher Illustrated. Well, what do we do with that 10th assistant coach? Now that Rob Smith isn't here, you know, are we going to hire a linebacker coach, a D-line coach, a DB coach? Minnesota is – so Joe Rossi was the D-line coach. Now he's the linebacker coach / DC. Rob Smith was the linebacker coach / DC, so is now Joe Rossi going to be just the DC? Minnesota also has a corner coach position open. The best answer I can give you is it's to be determined, because it's the honest answer. BJ Fleck's concern right now is not what is the 10th assistant coach and who is that going to be for spring ball 2019. It's finishing out this class and making sure that this team is prepared for whatever bowl game that they're going to be going to. And I, from what I've been told from sources as well, it's not necessarily we're only looking for a D-line coach or a linebacker coach or a corner coach. It's going to be whatever defensive coach we think is the best fit. That's what we're going to do. So in terms of everybody trying to speculate, well, who's it going to be in what position? Fleck's not going to know until after the bowl game when he can start to look at his options prior to the coaching convention. So stay tuned there.
All right. Any parting thoughts? I mean, this is, you know, the Gophers end up 6-6. Ryan, you were spot on in your assessment. I think I predicted 6-6 as well.
I think we were both 6-6 back in August.
Yeah,
not necessarily the way we thought they were going to get to six, but
yeah,
they certainly got there.
Yeah, for sure. Any parting thoughts, Derek, before we go? Just, you know, on the regular season as a whole.
Well, I wasn't on the prediction segment early in the year, but I think a few podcasts back, my thoughts were a 6.5 wins is the over under this year. So I would say that it was very interesting ride to get there, certainly. And I think that partly has to do with the inexperience, second year and the new coaching staff, a lot of young players made for an interesting roller coaster ride. But I think at the beginning of the year, if you were to say Gophers go to a bowl game and beat Wisconsin, I think most people are pleased with that. But certainly, you know, a couple of the losses were, you know, kind of bone crushing losses and almost inexplicable. But, you know, the future, as Ryan has touched on many times, the future is looks pretty bright. You know, a lot of young guys playing, maybe they've got things figured out on defense. From a coaching perspective, that change so far seems to be in the positive direction. So, excited for the team. Happy for the guys, happy for the players, especially the seniors, to beat Wisconsin in the final regular season game and see the team go to a bowl game and build towards the future.
All I can think about right now, Luke, is that picture of PJ Fleck holding a piece of paper with a bunch of, you know, like a graph going up, down, up, down, up, down. Like that, welcome to the 2018 season where it starts out hot, middle is very cold, November is very interesting. You go from really being really good in September to being really bad in October to being a mix of both in November, and it's just up, down, up, down, up, down. Well, you ended on an upswing. You just kicked Wisconsin's ass in Madison. That is something to absolutely hang your hat on and something to absolutely build upon when you look forward to that bowl game in 2018 and then springboard into 2019. Now, Luke, I think you and I would agree, and Derek certainly as well, we didn't think it was going to be the way they got to six wins.
No.
But six wins and you beat the crap out of Wisconsin the way that you did to get that axe back. I mean, I haven't seen a Gopher fan base as jubilated and as excited as they've been here in the last 24 hours following this Wisconsin win. And this game means so much to these players, so much to these fans, so much to this coaching staff. And the way that they were able to go out and grab that axe, you know, it's a lot to be proud of. And I think there's a lot to build upon here still going into 2019, because we'll continue to mention this. It's not like there's a gigantic senior class leaving a bunch of voids and a bunch of holes. Now, are you going to miss Jared Weiler and Donnell Green and Blake Cashman? Absolutely. You should have guys that can adequately replace them, if not be better. And so that's where I just look back at this 2018 season, smiling and shaking my head, thinking, what a ride. I mean, it's seemingly that way every year with 18 to 22-year-olds, but the highs and the lows and ending on an ultimate high here with a bowl game now in sight, whether that's in San Fran, Dallas, New York City, or Detroit, either way, those 15 extra bowl practices for an offense that greatly needs them is huge. For a defense that gets 15 extra practices with now who they know is going to be their defensive coordinator going into 2019, that's huge. And so a bowl game and a rivalry game victory is absolutely something to build upon towards 2019. Luke, what do you think? And then you want to take us out?
Yeah, I'm actually going to kick it to Derek for one last question, and then I'll take us out. But Derek,
sure.
We constantly hear about how important those 15 practices are. It's probably the most cliched thing to say, that it's great for the young players. Is that true, or is that just a cliche that everyone uses?
I think it is for the young players. I know people get to the point where people mock it now and you know, think perhaps maybe it's been a little overstated, and that so people's maybe expectations are, okay, if we go to a bowl game, that means the team's going to be 50% better next year just because we got the extra practices. So no, it's not to that degree, but it is valuable. What the coaches typically do is, it's like another spring practice series, in that you take the young players, you can try guys at different positions, you can do a lot of live reps, do a little bit more hitting because you've got a month of practice. You're not game planning, you know, with three practices to get to a game. You have a lot of practices to again, rep the younger guys, get them in scrimmage situations, get them work, make a position move that maybe you would make in the spring. You can start that early. And so there are a lot of benefits. I think that, you know, coaches say that for a reason, and, you know, it's not to be built up, you know, something unrealistic, but I think ultimately, yes, I think it does matter, and I think it will help the team.
All right. Well, as always, we want to thank everyone for listening. It's been a fun 2018 regular season. We're excited to, you know, get to see a bowl game this year. If you enjoyed the podcast, please rate and subscribe on whatever podcasting aggregator that you use. And if you especially like it, maybe share it with a friend as well. We want to thank our sponsor this year again, who was the Goal Line Club. They were a great partner for us, and it was a fun partnership that we hope to see going forward into the future. If you're interested in anything related to the Goal Line Club, head to goalineclub.org. Again, we want to thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.